you just got to have about a half a million a famed autographs. Her wallet filled with pictures, she gets them one by one, becomes so excited. Watch her look at her run, boy.
Oh, yeah, a little bit of Chuck Berry for you this morning. Get your blood circulating. It's a Wednesday morning, and it's the day after the, finally, the New Hampshire primary. We're going to talk a lot about it. I'm Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, February 12th. Wow. In a few minutes, Richard Morrison of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to be with us. A recent Wall Street Journal NBC poll asked how Americans felt about socialism. So we're going to tell you what people really think about that philosophy, the results of that survey. I think you're going to find it very interesting. And are Democrats committing suicide? I mean, did you watch the results of the New Hampshire primary last night? Bernie Sanders tops them all in New Hampshire. Could he really be their presidential nominee? We're going to talk about that. Plus, get some input from the proprietor of the barber poll, Andrew Ceraci. And why are all of the libs and Democrats upset about these prosecutors that are quitting in the Roger Stone trial? Why are they making such a big deal out of it? If you watched CNN yesterday, it's like the end of the world. So we're going to talk about that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, the top 10 least educated states, would you believe? So stay tuned for that. By the way, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. And men, if you live in Tampa Bay and you haven't visited Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you haven't gone to the best barber in Tampa Bay. He's located in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza. Now, that is just north of State Road 580 on Overcash Drive. Just take a right if you're going west. Take a left if you're going east. And then you'll see the little shopping plaza, and he's right smack dab in the middle. You can't miss it. Andrew's Master Barbershop. And please visit our website, ourfreedomworks.com. Our, O-U-R, freedomworks.com. Big Ed has all of our shows, up to the last one we do. He gets them in there for you, in the can. Hit the podcast button. Listen to any show you would like. What a treat. Okay. So, last night, I've got the results, Ed, as close as I can get them. Because you were asking me about who won in New Hampshire. Well, first of all, let me tell you that a gentleman by the name of Donald Trump won the Republican vote, and he got a huge turnout. Mm. And nobody's running against him virtually, but he still got a good turnout. Mm. Says a lot, I think, about the possibility that people cannot wait to go and re-elect him. Mm. That's just a thought. Okay, so Bernie Sanders gets 20, one quarter of the entire vote. And he picks up 9 delegates that he takes to the convention, right? Buttigieg gets 24.4. He's right on the edge. He also gets 9 delegates because he's so close. They each get 9. And then Amy Klobuchar, who I guess might be considered a little bit of a surprise, because here she was in Iowa, and she didn't do as well in her neighboring state of Iowa. She's from Minnesota. Then she goes out to the New England area, and she gets 19.8%, almost 20% of the vote.
Mm.
And she gets 6 delegates. So of all the people that did benefited the most from this whole thing, you might say it's Amy Klobuchar. Because everybody expected Sanders. He lives in Vermont. It's right next to New Hampshire. You don't even know the difference, do you?
It's spread out, and it's not a landslide by anybody.
No.
And when it's spread out like that,
that's
and,
correct.
You know, and when they get to the final delegate, there's going to be a lot of people that are not going to want to vote. I imagine when it comes time to vote, the Democratic vote's going to be way, way down.
Your friend Elizabeth Warren didn't do too well in her neighboring state.
She just
got 9.3% of the vote. I think there's a chance she will pack it in even before South Carolina.
Good, because I'm tired of looking at her. If she was in the same room as I was, she wouldn't have to say a word and she'd be annoying.
Well, you know who really likes her? Is Kenny, the guy that does the show right before and after our program. He kind of likes her, you know, from an attraction standpoint, don't you, Kenny? Oh, he's doing a...
He's doing a Nancy Pelosi.
He's doing a Nancy Pelosi.
Number one salute.
He's ripping up his speech. So she gets 9.3, and what happened to Lonesome Joe Biden? Lonesome Joe Biden? He's even worse than Warren. He gets 8.4%. Now, he's in Delaware, right? That's not far from New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like a lot of embarrassment between Warren and Biden. Now, Biden's got the funds, supposedly. You know, he's supposedly got the backing of the, what would you call it, the Hillary Clinton faction of the party, to some extent. Although that's not exactly true either, but he's got that kind of backing. So, Sanders narrowly edges Pete Buttigieg to claim victory. But again, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, she finishes far ahead of Elizabeth Warren.
Well, I can imagine a lot of Americans right now are saying, who?
So just think of it. A socialist versus a kind of business-oriented populist.
And then you'd have the creepoid, which would be Biden.
Well, I'm just talking about
The front two.
The ultimate. If Bernie Sanders wins the Democratic primary, despite, by the way, the Democratic operatives who do not want him to win, and will probably do anything they can to trip him up along the way. Now we got a long way to go.
Yeah, and do you think Bloomberg actually gets in anywhere?
Well, Bloomberg.
It was even a blip last night.
We talked about this. He's running his campaign by remote control. Mm. He's not going to visit anybody. Apparently, he's not a people person. He doesn't like to shake hands. He does not like to go into the midst and talk with people. He prefers to stay away from everybody and do this through multi-million-dollar ads.
Well, if that's his views, I have some bad news for him, because if you want to be president, some of that's going to happen.
You got to get in with the people. You got to get your hands dirty, right?
And he can't see over the podium anyway, so.
And that's the other problem. Yeah. I don't know how they're going to see him. You know, they might see the top of his head, but you'd have to have a better an angle looking down.
You imagine the debate, and they say, ladies, do you need anybody need a box to stand on?
Mm-hmm.
Ladies? And then Bloomberg says, I need one.
He may need two boxes to stand on, especially if he stands near Trump. You know, we told everybody about the tallest president. Trump is one of them. Can you imagine? It'll be a real Mutt and Jeff if anybody remembers those two. Anyway, we're going to take our break, and when we come back, we're actually going to talk about the thing that Bernie Sanders espouses, which is socialism.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a Wednesday morning, and we thank you for being with us on Freedom Works. And we are delighted to have Richard Morrison, a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, join us. And we're going to talk about a piece that he has put up on the CEI website, which talks about an NBC Wall Street Journal poll saying socialism is not so popular. After all, Richard, welcome to Freedom Works.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, our pleasure. Now, we're talking about this at a very interesting time. Bernie Sanders has won the New Hampshire primary, or at least he came in first. And, of course, New Hampshire is right next door to Vermont. So, you know, in many ways, it's his backyard. All of a sudden, socialism has this surge, I guess you might say, in the Democratic Party. And yet, when we take a look at what you wrote, registered voters overall say have a generally positive view of capitalism as opposed to socialism. Could you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, that's definitely true what we saw in this most recent poll. That was a poll that was done by NBC and the Wall Street Journal together. And that's the numbers we see there, generally positive view of capitalism, generally negative view of socialism, is consistent with other recent polls. But some people have pointed out that in the past few years there have been higher marks for socialism rising somewhat. Certainly, if you look at just Democrats rather than registered voters in general, if you look at just younger people, 18 to 25 or 18 to 30, they're also more likely to have positive views of socialism, and those positives are higher than they have been in recent or previous generations. But I think they're very much still held in check by a general enthusiasm for capitalism and free markets. And as I mentioned in here, if you look at another very similar poll, it was done by Gallup in 2018. So this previous one was done at the end of last year, late 2019. If you look at the 2018 Gallup numbers, they polled more than just capitalism, socialism, and popular politicians, like the NBC Wall Street Journal poll. You look at some of those other concepts that they ask people to rate. So when they ask you about free enterprise, how do you feel about free enterprise? We had a 79% positive. When you ask them what they feel about, how they feel about entrepreneurs, there's an 86% positive. And when you ask about small business, there's a 92% positive. So that is absolutely, completely off the charts. Virtually nothing in America, except, you know, mom and apple pie, qualifies with a 92% positive rating. So even though we've got some slight increase among people who are give the thumbs up to socialism and Democrats in general, and younger people in general are a lot more likely to say they're in favor of socialism, we have a deep reserve and wellspring, I think, of affinity for business, especially small business in America.
Now, the word capitalism also conjures up for some people corporate. Mm-hmm. They think of big businesses, right? And CEOs, and you know how they've been slapped around by the media. And I wonder if that has something to do with 52%, because I think if you went back a couple of generations, let's say to the Ronald Reagan era, and you asked people the same question about socialism versus capitalism, I bet my bottom dollar the favorability of capitalism would have been much higher. Your thought?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. What's interesting, one thing that I think was even sort of encouraging here is if you go back to, again, you go to, say, not back very far, just that 2018 Gallup poll I mentioned, even big business still came in with a 50% positive score, even though, you know, big businesses, that specific phrase is almost always used in you know, a negative term when you want to say something negative about big corporations. So even big business is more popular than socialism. That's sort of reassuring.
Yes, it is.
You know, back in the 80s, in the, you know, the Reagan era, obviously the big difference is that the United States is not in a struggle for global supremacy with the Soviet Union. So we don't have a big, you know, our sort of strategic competitors, if you want to use a nice phrase, on the international scene are Russia, the successor to the Soviet Union, and China, and in certain strategic areas, a country like Iran, but we don't have a big socialist powerhouse country breathing down our neck.
Right, they were more of an immediate threat, yes, and people associated socialism with communism. By the way, we're speaking with Richard Morrison. He is a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. They're very pro-business, we are delighted to tell you. Now, one of the things, Richard, that you bring up in your very interesting article is the real question is, what do people really think socialism means? And I think that's a very good point. Explain that, would you?
Yeah, so if you were going to ask an economist, you know, someone who's, say, an economics professor, what socialism is, they'd read you a sort of textbook definition that, a socialist economy is one in which the, central government controls the means of production. So traditionally, that would be something like the Soviet Union, where the country owns, the country's government owns the factories, owns all the, all the steel, all the cars, all the, factories that make shoes and consumer products, and they're in charge of all the farms and food production, and they're, in charge of everything. And they direct the economy centrally from the government top down and tell everyone what to do and what to make. Now, there's not a whole lot of countries like that anymore. Even, China famously had a sort of market revolution led by their premier at the time, Deng Xiaoping. And you've got a lot of companies that even in an ostensibly communist country like China function much more like market economies, like in the United States or Western Europe. So there's not a whole lot of sort of formal socialism, classic socialism. But we have a lot of we have plenty of government policies that are sort of in the direction of socialism, where you have some government control. And the countries that Bernie Sanders likes to talk about, for example, that he thinks are examples of socialism, the sort of Nordic countries like Norway and Sweden, saying we should be more like them, they have some government control, and certainly they have high taxes, but they're not really the textbook socialism.
They're technically capitalistic still, are they not? I mean, they've got their health care. Their health care is everybody gets health care, but you just mentioned the high taxes for that. But they're still basically capitalistic societies, right?
Yeah, so they have a largely market economy where I think it was actually the prime minister of Denmark at one point specifically responded to a Bernie comment in the news, saying, Bernie was basically saying we should be more socialist, like countries like Denmark, and the Prime Minister of Denmark said, well, actually, we're a market economy. We're not actually a socialist economy. But my point in here was that when people hear socialism, often they mean they like more government spending programs, or they like higher taxes. They don't want the government to take control of the entire economy. And as I think we see with all those very positive ratings for things like small business and free enterprise, that's very obvious that that's not what people want.
Right.
But it's definitely what people like Bernie Sanders want.
Well, Bernie Sanders is admitting, he wants to have, as you would say, the government control the means of production for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. He's unabashed. And yet, Look at how he does, in New Hampshire. Now, I used to think New Hampshire was somewhat of an independent thinking state. And yet he comes in number one there. That's kind of.
That's among the Democrats in New Hampshire.
That's true. Even among the Democrats, I remember when a Democrat was considered more of a blue collar type, but now they've gone so far to the left that socialism is rather attractive, is it not? I mean, there is a chance that a socialist could be the leader, could win the Democratic presidential sweepstakes.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. But like I said, I think we have differing opinions about different definitions of what socialism really means. So, Bernie Sanders has been a socialist basically his entire adult life, and he's definitely a sort of old-school kind of Marxist type, whereas most of the people today, including most of the younger people who, voted for, famously for, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York and some of these other young Democrats who have said that they're democratic socialists, maybe they're not just socialists per se, that have been gotten a lot of news coverage in the past couple of years. I think what they want, and I mentioned this in the article we're talking about, what they want is, affordable health care and a higher education system that actually works. And if the only people telling, offering them solutions say that, the thing you want is in this box that says socialist on the outside, then they'll say, well, that's what we need to have.
Yeah, right.
And I think if you have market solutions and reforms, not implementing additional laws, but repealing a lot of some of the bad laws we have now that have created the problems in healthcare and education, if you have someone coming out with solutions like that, those people will get support. And so this vogue for, quote, socialist policies isn't for socialism per se, and it definitely isn't for the sort of old school, Soviet-type government control of everything in the economy. I think it's just that the people who are talking most about healthcare solutions and higher education solutions are the people who have got socialist in their bio somewhere. And if you had more people talking, forcefully making the case for market-based reforms, especially for everything, but especially for healthcare and higher education, then this supposed popularity for socialism would evaporate overnight.
Yeah, you would think so. Now, the Republican Party, I think, is guilty. They have gone along with, for instance, in healthcare, they've gone along with a government involvement. I mean, they're afraid, I think, of coming out and saying, the federal government should not have anything to do with your healthcare. Nothing. Mm-hmm. You should have a market-based program. At the very least, you should remand this industry to each state rather than to the federal government. You'd still get a better deal out of the states than you would from the federal government. And even better than that, you should remand it entirely to the private sector, where you'll get the best product at the lowest price, even in healthcare, because the law of economics does not change from one industry to another. It remains the same. It remains the same. And they're afraid to say that. They're afraid that people are going to... I mean, the reason we have these ungodly amounts, if you don't mind me saying this, in healthcare, these ungodly prices, is directly because of government involvement from 1965 on. That's the reason, the main reason.
Yeah, I think that's true to a great extent. And you're definitely right about the Republicans being afraid to lead on healthcare. Going back, like we started with, poll numbers, you can look at practically any poll for the last decade, and when you ask people to rate the parties on, are they good on this issue or bad on that issue, Republicans are killed on health care every time.
Right.
It's the weakest issue by far, and it has been for ages. What health care policy really needs in this country is a big shakeup, like you said, getting government out of these decisions as much as possible, but it's also such a high stakes issue that bold policy can be scary, both for the people who are supposed to be.
Oh, absolutely!
It, well,
they want to get reelected.
People who
be
are
honest.
On the receiving end of it.
They want to get reelected. They want to get reelected.
Yeah,
and they think that if they say, we're going to take away your government health care connection, they're afraid they're going to alienate so many people. And, you know, the Democrats are jumping on this whole thing about Medicare and Social Security, trying to paint Republicans as a, you know, as a group that wants both of them eliminated. Well, you know, from a libertarian standpoint, I would like to see government involvement in both eliminated. I would tell you that you'd be better off taking Social Security money and giving it back to people under 55 with the interest that would have accumulated. You'd be better off giving them back their money to invest, and those over 55 continue on, but we can get out from the government funding retirement program. That's not that. Where in the Constitution does it allow the government to run your retirement program, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's certainly been a free market plank for a long time. You know, people like, you know, Steve Forbes or even, you know, George W. Bush. I don't know if everyone, if all your listeners remember what the Bush 43 presidency was like before September 11th, and a lot of the presidency turned to international and military affairs. But Social Security privatization was supposed to be the number one fiscal policy that the Bush administration
was pursuing. But it was the third rail.
That was going to be their number. That was the centerpiece of their domestic fiscal policy agenda.
I know, Richard, but it was the third rail even back then. I remember it. It was the third rail even back then. If you dare touch talking about privatizing Social Security, you could kiss your career goodbye. It's been that way for a while because, remember, Social Security came in 1935. It is fully vested in our public conscious now. Go ahead.
So with and taking it back to healthcare, where, you know, healthcare is, you know, big change to healthcare is politically risky. You know, you don't have to, even if you agree with all of us that we should have as little sort of state intervention as possible, and that, you know, market processes actually turn out higher quality, lower price outcomes. We don't have to go to the libertarian, you know, perfect world. We can get a long way there with medium step reforms along the way. Right now, I think a lot of people complain about is that so much healthcare, the good healthcare coverage that people want is tied to employment because of the tax laws. These go back decades that, you know, there's a tax preference for employer-provided healthcare. And that sort of, you know, locks people in, and it keeps people from taking better jobs and moving across the country because, you know, they don't want to lose their job because then they'll lose their healthcare at the same time. So, you know, taking that to a point where changing the tax laws so that healthcare insurance isn't necessarily always tied to employment, and creating a system where people spend more of their own money, or at least more of their own benefits, even if it's not cash that's in their pocket, you could easily see a system where you even unite the tax preference for employer healthcare now with some existing government policies like Medicaid for low-income, you know, government insurance for low-income people, coverage, especially for children, and what they call CHIP, the children's program, and roll that into one big, enormous, sort of like voucher-like program. You know, it'd be, it could be a little bit like vouchers for, you know, private schools, where, you know, rather than, one, the tax code forcing healthcare coverage into employment, and then having these multiple subsidized healthcare programs.
And let people choose where to go, yeah. Makes better sense.
You know, the logic of markets say that when people spend their own money, they're careful with it, they shop around, and that's the key to controlling costs and having providers bid for that business.
Right.
Right. What we have now is that most people aren't spending their own money. They have a benefit that's provided by a health insurance company, which is extended to them as a fringe benefit of their employment, which is subsidized through the tax code by the federal government. And so once you follow that snake of causation, very little of the actual money that's flowing through the system is actually controlled by the patients.
That's right.
Therefore, there's very little market discipline when it comes to prices and quality and competition.
Exactly.
So it's not surprising that we have a bad outcomes when we have a theoretically market system, which isn't really a market system, which is so heavily regulated, the incentives that are supposed to work in a market don't really work.
Really. Richard, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. We could go on and on about these topics, and I thank you so much. I know we'll be having you back and continuing with our conversations.
All right.
All right, sir.
Very good. Thanks, Paul.
All right, Richard. Richard Morrison of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Very interesting. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, boy, oh boy, Donald Trump had no competition in New Hampshire, and yet look at all the people that showed up to vote for him. We'll talk about all of that with the proprietor of the barber pole. It's all right.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Don't miss the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. We'll bring you up to speed on craft beer events and festivals, local breweries, and interview the brains behind the brews. So grab a pint and listen to the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network, and visit the website, thecraftbeerhour.com.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why don't you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Okay, we are back on a Wednesday morning, and listen to this. President Trump didn't have a serious challenger. He still turned out more than double the votes for Obama in 2012 without basically having a challenger. Trump secured more than 120,000 votes in New Hampshire. In 2012, you know how many Obama got, Ed? 49,000. 49,000. To 120,000 for Trump. So we've got the proprietor of the barber poll, Andrew Ceraci, with us. Andrew, are you surprised that that many people turned out to vote in the Republican
primary? No, Bob, because we didn't see what's going to happen November the 20th.
Well, I think this is indicative, is it not?
That's what I'm saying. It's the proof is in the packaging already. Look at Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire. You know, what's the big thing with New Hampshire? New Hampshire, nothing.
Well, wait a second. You mean you're dissing the Granite State all of a sudden? What's wrong with that? I mean, here we got a socialist winning. It's kind of interesting because, you know, we had two candidates that neighbor New Hampshire in there. We had, of course, Bernie from Vermont. Then over on the southern side, we had Elizabeth Warren, who, by the way, what happened to her? She got about 9% of the vote.
She's not attending a powwow today, that's for sure.
Oh, okay. Do you think she's off the reservation?
She's done, buddy. She's done. Slippery Joe there, he's done. Bernie, you got Cole Butcher there. Buttigieg ain't going to do nothing. Once he gets out of those northern states, he's over with.
By the way, we had three Democrats bow out. Andrew Yang, Deval yep. Patrick, and that other guy that's the businessman bowed out. I don't even think anybody noticed.
Nope. Well, nobody's noticing anything anyway. You know,
yeah.
You're gonna see now, like I told you. I don't know if you noticed the water temperature starting to turn up. You've seen Trump starting to clean house in the White House, right? He got rid of 73 people.
Yes.
That were Obama holdovers. Okay, now you're going to start seeing Biden being investigated. Okay, you're going to see the Durham report coming out slowly but surely, and it's like I told you, I still believe you're going to see Andrew McCabe, Bill Orr, his wife Nellie Orr, and Lisa Page and Peter Stroke. I think you're going to see some indictments coming down with them pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm wondering when this Durham report will finally come out now. Was he waiting to get past the impeachment? And
everybody was. He said, look at Trump, what he just did. He was waiting for this baloney to be over with too, Paul.
Yeah.
Now you're going to see the hammer fall. I mean, you think the Democrat Party's in turmoil now? You haven't seen nothing yet.
It's kind of fun.
No, but get the popcorn ready because it's going to get good. I mean, you know, they're going to show Bernie Sanders the only one that's there that's not a criminal.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know what?
Him and Buttigieg.
Don't count your chickens on that one too much either. I've been reading some of the background on Bernie, and there's some things.
Oh, yeah.
There's some interesting things in his background.
His wife is looking to buy a fourth house, and he's asking people for donations already.
We're talking with the proprietor of the only real poll that counts in America, the Barber Poll. And I want you to comment, Andrew Ceresi, on this story that, by the way, CNN was all over this thing. I was watching a little bit of CNN, it's like taking castor oil. I wanted to see what they had to say. And four attorneys in the Department of Justice have left. Because right. The Department of Justice decided that they should not be pushing a long sentence for Roger Stone. Now, Roger Stone got caught up in all of this investigation of Donald Trump. And the poor guy, the prosecutors, who are basically Democrats, holdover Democrats, wanted to push a 7 to 9 year sentence for Roger Stone. And the Department of Justice, currently, you know, under Donald Trump, said, whoa, let's ask for a lighter sentence. I wanted to get your thought on that.
Well, Paul, as I told you, you're going to see the Durham report coming out pretty soon. And I think you're seeing people running scared already.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
People
are running scared, Paul. And
you think they want to get out just... This is a convenient excuse to get out of the
I want to get out of Dodge now because I see the sheriff coming.
Well, the CNN story made it sound like Donald Trump intervened illegally by going to the Department of Justice and saying, "Look, those attorneys that are representing the department are asking for too severe a penalty, and I want you to go over there and slap their hands." So that's what CNN and even your buddy.
No, they can say whatever they want, Paul. First of all, nobody's even paying attention to
CNN
anymore.
No, nobody is actually. No, that's
true. Okay, number one. Number two, the fact of the matter is they're all starting to hide, Paul. You see it every day.
Yeah.
Every day. The hammer's coming down.
Okay, I've got to bring this up because, you know, Michael Bloomberg, who was, by the way, running his presidential aspirations, remote control, there's a newly surfaced recording from a speech in 2015. When he was talking about stop and frisk. And, of course, that became a controversial policing procedure, not only in New York, but in cities across the country. Let me find exactly what he said here in the clip, an audio clip, which, by the way, he was giving to the Aspen Institute, which is very conservative. He acknowledged that, quote, stop and frisk, unquote, targeted minority kids whom cops must throw, quote, up against the wall, unquote, to disarm. That phrase about, you know, you got to throw them up against the wall. And he said, you know, in many ways, what he was talking about was the truth.
Oh, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What would have happened if Trump said that?
Oh, they'd be all over him.
24-7,
racist,
buddy.
Racist.
24-7. Yeah, Bloomberg ain't going nowhere. I told you that right from the beginning. It's a good thing. Let him put his money back into circulation. It's about time he spent it on something.
Here's what campaign manager for Donald Trump said. Quote, all the money in the world can't undo this about Bloomberg.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. You know, that was just like Romney when he got caught in the background saying something. Remember?
Well,
about the 47%?
Yeah.
That's what made him lose the election.
I thought that was, I know what you're talking about. That was a rather mild comment, by the way, by a Romney.
I understand.
Of course, Romney was just standing up there and taking it without.
And they tore him up.
Back. Yeah.
They tore him up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Bloomberg's done. Let him keep spending his money. It's a good thing. He's putting it back in circulation.
Do you think?
The people are making money. Everybody's making money off of him.
Okay, so now it's going to be about 9 or 10 days from now that they will do the South Carolina primary. That is the next one. So, of course, Joe Biden left, got out of Dodge, or should we say New Hampshire, as quickly as he could. He left, by the way, all of his, it was kind of sad to see it. All of those people that were backing him were in this room you know, that he wasn't going to show up at because he was already in South Carolina. It was like, you know what, I'm going to get in the covered wagon. Why don't you cover for me? And, and he goes rolling away.
If you don't win South Carolina, you can hang it up. I can't see Bernie Sanders winning in South Carolina.
Now that, there's a high black population in South Carolina. Supposedly, that's the nugget of his base. Do you think he can win it?
Who? Biden?
Biden, I'm sorry. Joe Biden, yes.
If Biden doesn't win in South Carolina, he's not going to win anywhere, and he hasn't won anywhere yet.
Do you think Elizabeth Warren will be around when they come to vote in South Carolina?
No. I think Elizabeth Warren is gone.
You think she's gone?
Yeah, she's not going anywhere. They know it.
Okay. Well, you know, it'd be kind of sad to miss her. I like her, you know, screaming at people as she raises her hand and does
well,
fist bumps.
So who are they going to have in South Carolina? Biden, Buttigieg, and what's his name there? Sanders.
Okay, so what do you think about Buttigieg? He's doing pretty good. No, really, what do you think of him?
I don't think nothing of him. I think the guy is a flake. He was a lousy mayor, and the kid doesn't know what he's even talking about.
He's 38 years old. He's barely old enough to even run for president.
That's what I'm saying. He's not going nowhere.
You don't think so?
No, he's got his little population up in the Northeast, but I think once you start coming down to the Southeast, he's going to be in a different world.
Now, he is an openly gay man. Do you think that people would, forgetting all the politics...
No.
Well, let me just ask the question. Do you think...
No, go ahead. No, the answer. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to ask you, if you think that deep down, people in this country overall, still harbor a bias against gay people and would vote, therefore, against him, even though they might not espouse that.
Yep. Oh, you got all your Christians. They don't believe in homosexuality.
Okay.
It ain't going to happen.
So you think that, would that be the major issue against
him? No, but not even that. The guy, listen to what he talks about. He wants to legalize all the drugs, crystal meth. Don't put these people in prison. Let's give them everything they want. The guy's nuts. He ain't going nowhere.
Isn't this the wildest, craziest, maybe dumbest Democratic group of people you've ever seen in your
life?
That's
right, and that's what they turned into, Paul. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the Democrat Party is no longer the Kennedy Party, believe me.
I think people are beginning to see, like you had said, the tsunami coming.
It's coming, too, believe me. Like I say, if you think the Democrat Party looked like fools now, by the time Trump's done with them, you got no idea, man. And he's on the warpath, too. I wouldn't fool with the man.
Well, if a tsunami's coming, I got to go out and buy a wetsuit. I want to thank you, Andrew, very much again for being with us. You'll be back Friday. Be interesting just to see if maybe if even Elizabeth Warren is still around by then.
Yeah, she could be smoking the peace pipe somewhere.
She might be back on the reservation. You're right.
You got it, buddy.
Or maybe
all right, Paul.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
There he goes, the master barber, Andrew Ceraci. Always a pleasure to talk with him. So much energy. And by the way, great haircut. You got to get over there. Tuesday through Saturday, they're open. All right, we're going to take our final break. And when we come back, you know what? There's a black news channel that's coming on board. We're going to talk about that along with our great top 10.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all...
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back with the final segment, Freedom Works. Thank you so very much for being with us. We're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the great Tan Talk Radio Network. Speaking about networks, the nation's first news channel that focuses on the black community is being launched. It's called the Black News Channel. It's going to offer original programming created by people of color, for people of color, according to its website. It is spearheaded by J.C. Watts. Now, he is a conservative black man, and he was in Congress, former Republican from Oklahoma, and he was a football player. I think Ed would possibly remember J.C. Watts from Oklahoma. That was a few years ago. Ed's not sure he remembers him. Okay, Ed, that's all right. But J.C. Watts has been working on this Black News Channel concept for over 10 years. It will be a conservative black news channel. And they claim to be able to reach more than 100 million homes. They say that the channel, this is the vice president of news and programming, he says the channel will not be partisan. Not be partisan. They're going to try to, you know, kind of stay away from whether it's conservative or liberal. Now, here's the here's Gary Wardlaw, who is their vice president. He says, "We're going to give the nation a look at the black community that has not been seen on any other network. Our mission is to illuminate and to tell the truth. We are not partisan. We're not political. We're journalists. And we want to give good stories from the people's perspective." So I think that there's probably a place for that, you know? There is a black, it's called BET, Black Entertainment Television. Mm-hmm. But, of course, that doesn't...
That just shows basically black movies,
right?
Actors and stuff like that.
Right, and I suspect it's doing fairly well, is it not, for its niche?
I like it, but I don't... Yep. It could be whatever. It's just a good channel.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So this
but
is
whatever sells to advertisers. That's what's going to be the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I remember J.C. Watts, and he is indeed a conservative Republican. And you know, one of the few back when he was running in Congress from Oklahoma, one of the few black conservatives. Mm. Took a lot of, I think, a lot of courage to be there doing that. So it will be very interesting to see. We should follow that. And see, you know, how that turns out. Anyway, I think it is time, Ed, for our top 10. We have a very interesting top 10, as we always do. And, you know, you never can really say that it's the ultimate for sure truth. But this is, according to WalletHub, the top 10 least educated states. Now, apparently WalletHub analyzed how many people over 25 years of age have completed certain educational benchmarks, like a bachelor's degree, etc., to come up with its ranking for 2020 in the most and least educated. So without further ado, top 10 least educated states in America. Number 10, Tennessee. For some reason, Tennessee is not doing real well that way in comparison. Now, I used to live there, and I always thought they had some pretty good universities there, including in Knoxville and Vanderbilt in Nashville. Anyway, number 9, New Mexico. Now, they have a large Navajo population, and I'm not sure that there's a lot of education involved there with reservation areas, and I wonder if that contributes to it. Yeah. Number 8. Nearby Nevada. Nevada. Gee, I always thought some of those schools like Utah and Utah State were pretty good. Mm. And how about Brigham Young? I thought that was a pretty good school. I wonder sometimes about these rankings. Okay, number 7. Well, number 7 is the site of the next primary, South Carolina. South Carolina doesn't. Isn't Clemson in South Carolina at? Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes.
Isn't that a good school? I always thought it was pretty good. Okay, number six. I'm kind of arguing against the states that they're listing, aren't I? Number six is Kentucky. Kentucky. Mm. Well, I can see that in a way. You know, a lot of coal mining and people maybe didn't get a good education at the time. All right, number five. Alabama. Now, I used to live in Auburn.
Boy, this poll is really against the South.
It
isn't
is.
It?
That's what I was going to say. So far, you're right. You're right, exactly right. And wait till you hear the rest of them. Number four, Arkansas.
I can spell moonshine.
I'm going to go behind the barn.
Boy.
I don't need no stinking education.
This is really
biased. The only
biased.
Education I'm going to have is liquid education right now.
This is really biased.
It is. Wait till you hear the next one. Number three. Louisiana.
That's what I was going to say,
too. Yeah. You knew they'd be in there. I guess there's no good schools in New Orleans, although I thought Tulane was a pretty good school, Tulane University. Let's see. Where are we? Number two. Well, you knew this one would be in there. West Virginia.
Of course, yeah. I was waiting for Virginia to creep in there somewhere.
Hatfield and McCoys. I don't know if people remember that old story of the Hatfield and McCoys, but it took place in good old West Virginia. West Virginia. All right, Ed. Do you think there's any? It is a southern state.
All right,
what do you think? Go ahead.
I'm going to go with North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah. Okay, roll the drum. You're absolutely wrong. Mississippi.
Oh.
Mississippi. Yeah. Mississippi State. Ole Miss. What's going on with it? And Elvis came from there, didn't he? Tupelo, Mississippi?
I don't know. It was before me.
I tell you what. You're right. It is biased against the southern states. I'm not so sure I agree with this thing. We would do it, you know, according to what they say. But I'm not so sure that's a good one. All right.
In the 30 seconds, I wanted to tell you something because there was a photo on Facebook. It was a photo of Nancy ripping up the documents, of course. And she was really ripping up was a note from, it said, "Roses are red, your impeachment blue. Now you've got four more years of me. I love you."
Is that what she was ripping?
Love, Donald.
There you go. That would make more sense. That would make more sense. Well, listen, folks, stay tuned for the Craft Beer Hour with host Kenny and Bill right after the news. You cannot miss it. Great show. Thank you for being with us. We will be back Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. But always remember, freedom works.